time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello everybody and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up with a Saturday morning sun plopped on the living room floor with a big bowl of sugary cereal and watch all your favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
This morning, we watched Clone High.
I really, really like the intro a lot. Like, it's probably one of my favorite intros of any cartoon we've watched so far. Kind of sound like it could be They Might Be Giants or something, like singing it. I don't know, but I really liked it. Oh, it was performed by the Abandoned Pools. I don't know who that is.
Do you know the song for, not that I watched this show, but do you know the song for Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, it sounds kind of similar. Like, at least, okay. You know, the voice sounds similar, but it's not the same band, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. That's what I was thinking. That's the tune that was kind of going on in my head was something similar to that, and that's what my comparison was.
It's like that, but it's a little bit more of like, I don't know, like shoegaze kind of music in a way. Like, it's sort of that depressing, melancholy kind of song.
Okay.
But I'm really into it. I really liked it a lot.
Who suggested this?
This was suggested by Mark via YouTube. He also suggested for us The Tick, which is why Joseph is in love with him. So thank you, Mark.
I know. I just wanted you to say his name again so I could hear it.
Mark.
I love you.
Mark.
Mark.
Saw
Mark.
No.
No. No, okay.
You can't do that to Saw Boss. He's earned it.
Yeah. Mark hasn't gotten the Saw title yet.
No.
Okay, so the show Clone High ran from 2002 to 2003. It was created by Phil Lord, Christopher Miller, and Bill Lawrence. Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, as Chris pointed out to me, were the directors who were recently fired from the Han Solo movie.
Yeah, man, that's not going super well for them. They're apparently, like, that movie must be a hot mess right now because they also brought in an acting coach for their main actor, the one playing Han Solo, because it's been so bad.
Never a good sign. To be fair, even for like the Ant-Man movie, Edgar Wright had left that as the director because he didn't have enough creative control over it. And it's kind of the same thing here. So I'm not faulting these guys for it. Like, they just didn't have enough control that they, the right controls that they wanted. Like, I guess it's so scripted in such a way that they just felt like they couldn't make it their own image.
They kept going off script, and like from what I understand, I think it was, I don't know if it was Phil or Chris, said that their vision was Star Wars meets Ace Ventura Pet Detective. And I was please, no. Like, no, thank God they got fired if that's what they were doing, because no, that's awful.
I can't see how that would work with a Han Solo movie, but I guess I never will know. But now we have Ron Howard on it, so
yeah,
should be good.
And an acting coach. For Han Solo.
Right, and an acting coach. So it's going to be better.
Yeah.
This was produced by Doozer, Lord Miller Productions, Nelvana, Touchstone Television, Teletoon Original Production, and MTV Original Productions. Ran for one season, 13 episodes on the Teletoon Network in Canada and on MTV in the US. And for a short synopsis, the greatest minds of the world have been cloned and are now attending high school together.
I don't agree with that because it's not really the greatest minds. It's just,
well,
it just seems like a hodgepodge.
Random assortment of minds have been cloned.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. But okay. I mean, there's clones. It's just the greatest minds. That doesn't really apply.
If you know those like teen drama shows or whatever, I can't think of an example of one, but it's that, but it's like a parody of that. So everything is just embellished and over embellished. And it's just everything's the greatest thing ever. Or I think the intro every episode with like, you know, the best episode ever or something like that.
Oh, Laguna Beach. There's a team drama you can compare it to.
Okay.
And I loved it back in the day. That's my, that was my guilty pleasure. I used to watch Laguna Beach religiously. I'm pro LC, so you Kristen people, get out of here.
Anyway, Chris, who are some of the actors who played in this show?
All right, so the voice of Abe Lincoln was provided by Will Forte, who you might know from Saturday Night Live and Last Man on Earth. The voice of Mahatma Gandhi was Michael McDonald, who was also in Scrubs and Mad TV. The voices of Joan of Arc and Marie Curie was Nicole Sullivan, who was on Mad TV, King of Queens, Scrubs, Cougar Town, and currently on Blackish. There's a lot of really high profile TV sitcoms and stuff, so good for her. The voice of Cleopatra was Krista Miller, who was on The Drew Carey Show, Scrubs, and Cougar Town. Are you noticing a pattern as far as people from Scrubs?
Bill Lawrence was actually the creator of Scrubs, creator of this show.
That makes a lot of sense, because you're going to see this trend continue. The voices of JFK and Mr. Butlertron was Christopher Miller, and then the principal, Dr. Cinnamon J. Scudworth, and Genghis Khan was Phil Lord. Yeah. As we talked about, they were writers and directors of this show. Those two together also did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, 21 and 22 Jump Street, and they were the writers and producers for How I Met Your Mother, which is one of my favorite sitcoms of all time.
Mm.
Voice of Mr. Sheepman, Vincent Van Gogh, the police officer, and Thomas Edison was Andy Dick, who's known for The Ben Stiller Show, Get Smart, and The Andy Dick Show, as well as Less Than Perfect. I remember Andy Dick was all over MTV at this time. He even had his own reality show called Snipped, in which like people competed to be his assistant, and he was just as big a jerk as possible and made everyone's life terrible. The voices for Julius Caesar, Buddy Holly, and Moses was Neil Flynn, who was the janitor from Scrubs, and also starred in the sitcom The Middle. And finally, the voices of Toots, George Washington Carver, and Martin Luther King Jr. was Donald Faison, who was Turk on Scrubs. Yay, so many Scrubs people, which is cool because I used to love Scrubs. And I had this weird thing where anytime I watch Scrubs, I crave sushi. And anytime I eat sushi, I really want to watch Scrubs. And I don't know how that started.
The show I was thinking of earlier, the Canadian teen drama, was Degrassi.
Oh, gross. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I never watched that. I don't know.
No, I didn't either, but I remember it. And I guess you could even go to Saved by the Bell. It's like teen comedy drama. Yeah, this is an animated parody of those type of shows.
Another one is Riverdale, which I recommend watching if you haven't watched Riverdale. It's cool.
Mm.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's my current guilty pleasure.
Probably the most current one. Yeah, that's a good one. For anyone unfamiliar with Riverdale, that is, of course, Archie from Archie Comics and the crew.
Like you've never seen them before.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking to see it at first.
I really enjoyed it. I love it a lot.
So for a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Clone High cereal, complaints over the Gandhi character led to MTV pulling the show from airing in the United States and subsequently to the show's cancellation.
I could see that. As I was watching this, I was kind of surprised they were getting away with it.
I was wondering how they were getting away with it. But yeah, I guess that's why it got restricted to 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Also, and this is something I didn't notice, so I can't verify it, but I'm sure if we went back, we could probably find out. Teen Wolf makes a cameo in each episode.
What?
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
I mean, I'm sure it's small, like background roles, but I had no idea. But I sourced really it at two different places. So I'm like, well, it's got to be believable. If two people say it, it's got to be true.
Yeah. Especially two people on the internet. If they said it.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's true.
100% fact. Also, and this is probably more believable, there are dolphin noises or an actual dolphin in every episode.
I recall seeing
some dolphins.
I don't remember a dolphin.
So that I can kind of verify. In the script for the pilot, Mr. Butlertron was named Mr. Belvatron and programmed to take on the characteristics of movie sitcom character Mr. Belvedere from the Mr. Belvedere Show in 1985. And this is the reason why he calls everybody Wesley. The reason for that is because there was a kid in the Mr. Belvedere Show named Wesley that he was the butler of. So that's why it ties back to that. But after the pilot, they renamed him to Mr. Butlertron. So it kind of loses that connection, but it's still there.
It's still funny that he still calls everybody Wesley, and it makes me laugh like every time.
Yeah, it's just funny. Like even if there's no connection to Mr. Belvedere, it's still hilarious to hear.
Yeah, it is good.
God, I love that voice. The last five episodes were never aired in the U.S., and that kind of connects to what I said at the beginning, most likely because of the complaints over the Gandhi character.
Too bad. Too bad.
So, Chris, do you have any memories of the show?
I didn't recognize the name, but when I saw I saw a photo on IMDb that showed some of the character designs, Then I remembered it being on. I remembered vaguely seeing maybe commercials and stuff for it. Mainly, I just remember JFK saying this line, "I stuffed the entire freshman class into Tadlockers." And that's pretty much all I remember of that show. But I don't think I ever actually watched it.
Yeah, I never heard of this show, period. I have no other explanation because it just never crossed my radar. I had no idea it existed until we found out about it.
Yeah, I think it was like a later night cartoon with, there's another MTV cartoon I used to watch called Three South that I thought was really funny. And I think these aired probably around the same time.
Only MTV cartoons I used to watch were Beavis and Butthead, Sometimes the Head Takes Over the Earth.
I don't know that
and,
one.
And I think The Max, was that on MTV?
Oh, I don't know.
I can't remember.
Daria, I saw a little bit of Daria.
Yeah, oh yeah, Daria. Ren and Stimpy may have been on MTV at one point after its
yeah, it eventually did go from to MTV.
Nick, yeah. So those are what I remember from MTV, cartoon-wise. Okay. Oh, and Aeon Flux.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one.
So for now, let's jump into the three episodes we watched for today's show. Very first episode, highest rated episode, finally random listener chosen episode. What am I very depending on how these episodes fall chronologically, but of course we have to start with the very first episode, being Escape to Beer Mountain, A Rope of Sand, Season 1, Episode 1. We see in the intro that, I think the intro actually spells it out for us, like, yeah, the 1980s government employees, like, clone these historical figures from the past and make them go to high school together. It's very loose plot. It doesn't make any sense, but yeah. It's funnier. It's almost funnier because it makes no sense.
I think it was like they wanted to clone all these historical figures. I don't know if they came out as teenagers or if they've... Oh, I guess not, because there's something that Gandhi says at one point. So no, they grew like any other child and adult. So I'm guessing that they're just at that stage in life because they were all cloned at the same time that they're all teenagers now. So they're having them go through high school and everything. So yeah, so this is a high school specifically for clones of historical figures. They're like pretty exaggerated versions of most of them. Like JFK is like, basically the douchey jock that's trying to sleep with all the girls. God, he's such a piece of crap.
It's funny because it's all the stereotypes you can think of from high school.
Yeah.
But in the form of these historical figures.
Yes.
Like Abe Lincoln is just the tall, like lanky, awkward guy.
Yeah, he's like the everyman of this show, you know, the one that like sure, likes the yeah. girl but doesn't know how to really get the girl.
Gandhi's like the party animal.
Dude, he's obnoxious. I hate Gandhi. Okay, I don't hate Gandhi. I hate Gandhi in this show. Please don't misconstrue that. But Gandhi in this show is a horrible character. Like, I cannot stand him at all. And like they should have just done something else or like use a different character or whatever, because he's the one that got them canceled anyway. So they paid for their mistakes, man.
His attitude was just so much different than everyone else's, or just his level of, I don't know, the way that he was acting was so much different that it kind of like threw episodes off balance a little bit.
Yeah, I think so.
That's how I felt too. I did not like his character either. In the show, we love real Gandhi.
We love real Gandhi, except for, like, you know, the bad things that he did that aren't reported too much. We don't condone those, but the good things he did, no. We support him. Yay!
And we don't condone animated Gandhi.
Joan of Arc was the girl that was, she's like the goth girl that's really depressed and sad. And, well, she has feelings for Abe, and she kind of, like, confesses her feelings pretty much every episode. And he's always either not paying attention or just doesn't hear her or whatever.
No, yeah, he's so clueless to it. We see a bunch of side characters, too. Like, we see the Elvis twins at one point, which is, like,
oh, yeah.
Fat Elvis and then Thin Elvis.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, Cleopatra is one of the other main characters, and she's basically the hot girl. She's the one that everyone wants. So she ends up with JFK a lot. They're on and off again, and she's the one that Abe is constantly trying to hook up with.
I like the scene where he's at the trophy lock or the trophy case. And like she's, I don't know if she's inviting him to a party or something, but she's talking to him and he's leaning up against it and his hand pushes through it, like breaks the glass, and he's still just leaning against it. And Joan of Arc's like, "Abe, I think you're bleeding." And because he's bleeding all over the glass, and he's just like, "Not now."
That was really good.
That made me laugh.
Yeah. You know, for me, kind of going into this thinking this wasn't going to be the best, like, I laughed a lot watching this show. Yeah, there was so a lot of laughs so to be had.
With the exception of Gandhi, like, yes. I thought this was a really strong show for the most part. Comedy-wise, there were definitely laugh-out-loud moments for me.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty for me.
The main antagonist of the show is the principal, Principal Scudworth.
Dr. Principal Scudworth.
Dr. Principal Scudworth. Cinnamon and is Cinnamon, his first name. Yes. Yeah. He's working for, I guess, the dark, shadowy government or something. And he's trying to control all of these public figures, or, well, not public figures right now, but as they're growing up so that he can control them essentially in the future.
Because he's basically like, you know, these are all very important people. I guess his logic is that they will once again be important people. So he needs to control them for his own means. And he kind of is, you know, he's being sort of controlled or at least overseen by the shadowy government figures. He's, you know, absolutely ready to like do things for his own and kind of go against them.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure they know that. So it's kind of like, you know, he's got these plans and big ideas, but they already know what it is. And they don't really make it a secret that they know, but I don't think he really comprehends that they know. Yeah.
it's one of those situations where they know that he doesn't have the capability to actually pull anything off.
Right. Yeah.
So they just leave him alone and leave him to his own devices.
He also has a like desk drawer full of paper pirate hats.
And he has who is probably my favorite character. His assistant is his robot named Mr. Butlertron that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love this character so much.
He's
in
so
his
good.
Cardigan sweater. Yeah.
Yeah, his magic cardigan that he wears.
Right.
Wesley. I like, you know, they do drop that thing where Scudworth is like, he calls everyone Wesley. I don't know why. And they don't, you know, they don't make any other reference to it, but he always does it. Now because of the marshmallows that you talked about, we know why, but I think it's hilarious that they make that joke that they don't know why, and then they never address it again.
Yeah, no one even like says anything or corrects him. They're just used to him calling everyone Wesley now.
Oh yeah, they're totally fine with it.
That cardigan sweater is definitely from Mr. Belvedere also, so that's another tie to that. Yeah. So JFK is having a party at his place. And, you know, everyone's trying to get invited to it. They're at this, their local diner or their smoothie shop, I guess, is called the Grassy Knoll, obviously from, you know, JFK
history.
Oh,
I didn't catch that till now. Oh,
really?
My God.
Oh, man.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so that's their meetup joint. And they, Abe is trying to get invited to the party because earlier in the episode in the restroom, JFK uninvites him, like make sure he knows that he's not invited. He does one of those things where he like keeps coming in and out of the bathroom door, like explaining himself like you're not invited. And then just over and over, like says it more and more clearly to make sure he knows. But then he's like in the diner, I think he's just like, I'll bring beer. And he's like, OK, be there at 8 or whatever. And
real quick, can we talk about Mr. Sheepman? Because that guy, that made me laugh out loud the first time I saw him. So he, instead of being a historical figure, he's just a clone where the DNA was spliced with a sheep. So he's like a sheep man, literally.
Yeah, he was the first official successful clone.
Yes.
But they were still using a sheep DNA to clone with him. And so he's just a mixture of man and sheep.
And he sounds like Don Knotts when he talks, which I think is hilarious.
And he periodically, like, he'll shave some of his wool off.
Yeah, he'll, like, shave his stomach so it looks like he's wearing, like, a belly shirt of just wool.
Oh, Eleanor Roosevelt is a gym teacher.
Oh, yeah, she's so scary.
Lincoln is, like, after he promises to get the beer, he realizes, like, he has no idea how he's going to do this. And this is kind of his dilemma for the episode. And then Gandhi's trying to convince him. And he's like, well, what if you just say that you said, I'll get the beards and then give everyone. And it has this like scene where it flashes to everyone in beards. That's just kind of the way Gandhi jokes. It wasn't super funny, but it was all right.
Yeah, I did the kind of,
Right.
That was my reaction.
Oh, man. A funny part, though, with the trying to get the beers thing is when he brings Genghis Khan into it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, all right, just tell him, because Genghis Khan's just a big dude with, you know, facial and everything. So he's more believable that he's going to be over 21.
But so, like, but the important thing is, like, Genghis Khan is basically, like, mentally handicapped in this version. Like,
yeah,
he's slow. He doesn't understand pretty much anything and can't remember anything he's really supposed to do. And he's brutally, not brutally, he's honest. Like, he's too childlike and he can't lie.
Yeah. And so, like, all Abe is telling him is, like, all right, just just tell him you're over 21. Like, if he asks you how old you are, say you're over 21. And then he goes in there and it keeps showing scenes of him failing.
Yeah.
And then at one point, Abe's like, all right, I understand he threw like some difficult questions at you. But the question was just literally like, are you over 21? And
yeah.
He still messed it up. And at one point he succeeded. He's like, I'm over 21. And then he gets the beer or he hits the keg and he's walking off with it. And he's like, I'm not over 21. And he brings
he
it
comes back. Like he's too childlike. He feels too bad. And then,
yeah.
Oh God. I thought that was a really, really funny interpretation of him. Just making him like a big dumb oaf.
No, that was so fun.
Abe ends up getting non-alcoholic beer and brings it to the party. He's worried people are going to figure it out, but everybody is like acting super drunk. Like there's people running around like naked. Like I think Gandhi's one of them and like all kinds of stuff is going on.
Cleopatra comes up, I think, and starts talking to Abe kind of towards the end of the party.
She's like, maybe it's the alcohol, but you're looking good.
And he's just like, I doubt it. And so she starts making out with him. And that's when I think at this point, Joan of Arc has worked up the courage to come and tell Abe how she feels.
This made me laugh so hard because like right when like she's worked up all this courage to tell Abe how she feels about him. She walks up and sees them making out and it zooms in on her face and she starts crying and just blasting this Dashboard Confessional song. And I laughed so hard. Like, for those of you that didn't grow up in the time period me and Joseph did, Dashboard Confessional was the absolute epitome of emo, like sad emo music possible. So to hear that right when that scene kicked in, oh my God, I lost it, dude. I don't think I've laughed that hard in I don't know how long.
It was funny. Actually, I'm a fan of Dashboard, or I was back when in high school, of course. So I knew that they were kind of teasing it up to that point. I could hear the tune of that song going on in the background.
Oh, man.
And I was like, yeah, it sounds like Dashboard. And then they play that, and I'm like, oh, man, that's great. That's perfect placement of that.
It was perfect.
And so after, so with Abe, it's after they finish making out and JFK comes up to confront him. He's like, he tells me, he's like, I don't want to exaggerate the importance of it, or I don't want to exaggerate the importance of this, but we're going to be together forever. And that's how he's trying to explain his and Cleo's current relationship.
Right.
Oh, George Washington Carver's thrown in there.
Oh, yeah.
With,
I love
with this
guy.
Weird Mr. Peanut. Yeah.
So George Washington Carver, he's obsessed with peanuts. I mean, obviously, that's what the real one, he invented peanut butter. So this one's obsessed with peanuts, but in a different way. And he, like, creates an anthropomorphic peanut who's, like, I don't know. He's, like, kind of British. I don't remember what it was. Like, was it he was trying to get someone to kiss him it was Cleo, like, kissed him or something like that, you know, early in the night. Because somebody was, like, you know, she's only kissing you because she's drunk. She even made out with, like, this peanut guy over here.
Yeah. His character is just funny because of his weird voice.
Yeah.
The cops come eventually to break up the party, and it comes to a point, and this I thought this was a kind of a cool scene. Yeah, well, the cop was funny, but it was kind of a cool scene where it comes to a point where Abe has to choose between Cleopatra and his friends, who are, you know, Gandhi and Joan of Arc.
Oh, yeah, because the cop starts arresting people, but he can only fit two people in the cop car. So he takes Joan and Gandhi and he's like, the rest of you are free to go. I can only fit two.
So as he's about to drive off, like Abe has to go admit to him, like he's either about to walk off with Cleo or this is his point to make that choice. So he chooses his friends, tells the officer that it's not alcoholic beer. And repercussions of that are great, because then the officer starts making fun of him, and yes. then everybody starts making fun of him.
Yeah, everyone's like, you're a loser. Like, even the cop, yeah. like he said. I love when the cop first shows up, and he's like, if it isn't my old friend, underage drinking. How you been, friend?
Yeah. So yeah, this was a good episode. Obviously,
it was
the
good.
First episode was a lot of fun. Like, this was a great intro episode because it gave you everything you kind of need to show the dynamics of everyone. So the second episode we watched for today's show was ADD. The last D is for disorder. Season 1, episode 3. And this was the highest rated. And in this one, when Gandhi is diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, one of the most annoying things about Gandhi, where he's always sticking things up his nose for
yeah,
no
that's
reason.
Stupid.
And in this case, it was just two fries, like two French fries. And Abe is like laughing hysterically over it. We see Cleo come in, and she's promoting awareness for the promoting awareness. Of Awareness Month. Yeah.
They're going to do an awareness fair about awareness.
Right.
And she said that she's dating JFK again now, and that they're going to have an open mouth kissing booth, but JFK is not down for it. As he reveals on his t-shirt, it says no fatties. So he right. can't participate in the open mouth kissing booth, but
yeah,
but
you know my rule. Yeah, no fatties. You know?
Yes. And I think Abe is like, I can't remember if he does or not, but I think Abe volunteers to help her with the kissing booth at this point.
Oh, right. We jump to the principal and Mr. Butlertron, the principal's trying to figure out like why, you know, he can't relate to the kids, like why they all like Mr. Butlertron and not him. And Mr. Butlertron's just like, well, I try to listen with compassion instead of killing them. And Scudworth is still, he's so clueless. He's just like, I got it. I know what it is. Your cardigan. It's your magical cardigan sweater. And so he makes Mr. Butlertron take it off. But when he's making him take it off, he's just like, but it's cold and flu season. And so, but he ends up taking it off anyway and giving it to him. And I think at this point, JFK kind of walks by and he's attracted to that magical sweater.
Oh, yeah. Immediately.
Yeah. And for the remainder of the episode, like it's kind of JFK and Scudworth going back and forth and kind of becoming buddies.
And there's something that happens with Joan early in this episode that we need to explain before we go further, which was. So while Gandhi was acting like an idiot, he was making Joan angry, and then he pulls Joan's retainer out, puts it in his own mouth, and does an impression of Joan. When she gets the retainer back, she sees that the wire's bent, and she's like, you know, this better not give me an overbite or something, or, you know, I'll kick your butt. And she puts it back in. But then later, she starts hearing, you know, if you know the actual story of Joan of Arc, she starts hearing what she thinks is the voice of God. And she starts freaking out, and she's like, the voices, finally the voices. And she's basically just following these voices about God and stuff like that the whole rest of the episode. And it has her doing like the weirdest stuff. And she's just kind of going yeah. kind of nuts.
Yeah. And we can't hear any of it. Like we're just going off what she's saying.
Yes.
Like she'll talk to herself like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. And she'll just do some weird request, which comes up later, but we'll let you know when it gets there. Still in the principal's office, we've got, or I think it comes to a point where Gandhi gets into the principal's office.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're trying to figure out like what's wrong with him, like why he's all over the place and all that. And Mr. Butlertron takes like a hair sample or something. I can't remember what. And he like starts like calculating it through his system. Oh, Wesley. You have ADD.
While he's calculating it though, you know how he's usually like, talks like this, but here he goes beep boop beep boop boop beep boop 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 boop.
Oh yeah,
it's not a sound effect; it's his mouth doing it.
Right, just for the longest time, and it makes it hilarious.
Yeah,
and ADHD. Yeah,
ADD. And Gandhi's like, ADD. Am I dying? I love how the rumor about him having ADD starts immediately, and you've got like these theater kids singing this whole song about it in the hallway. And they're like,
did you hear?
Part of the song is
hear?
Like, don't tell Paul Revere, Gandhi has ADD. And they're like singing it and stuff like that. And my favorite part is Paul Revere comes riding down the hallway on a horse. He's like, too late. And yeah. So Paul Revere is voiced by Zach Braff, also of Scrubs fame, which just made it even nice. Better.
This was reminding me of the Captain Planet episode we watched with the you know, spreading, telling everybody that that one kid had HIV.
Yep. I actually wrote that down exactly because the same thing is happening. People don't understand what ADD is and they're all afraid they're going to catch it. So they're like, right. all like shunning him, including Abe, who doesn't want to look gross in front of Cleo.
Right. Abe was at one point, Abe's like, it wasn't because they didn't care about you. It was because they didn't want to touch you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's because Gandhi wanted a high five and Abe didn't want to give it to him. And that's what like right. started Gandhi down this path of like, he gets super upset and he's like, you don't want to be bros? And it's just because he wouldn't high five him.
Oh, and they have these medals, these like best friend medals or something, or best buds or best bros medals.
Yeah, they were called, it was called the Best Dudes Forever Lockets. Like each of them had a best dude forever locket that they both wore.
We definitely need those.
Yeah.
After the Paul Revere song, just right after it, Abe was like, it can't be true. Like talking about Gandhi having ADD. And he's like, but then again, it rhymed. So it must be.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought that was really funny.
That was good. I like it. We also see Joan. And they always call her Joan of Arc, too. Like, like her last name is of Arc. So they'd be like, Miss of Arc. Anyway, she goes and finds this guy, Jesus Cristo, who's like in a woodworking class. And it's supposed to be, you know, it's basically supposed to be Jesus, but they made him like Cholo, basically. He's just super ghetto Hispanic. And it is hilarious.
It was very good. He's constantly referring to the crucifixion, too. At least in this episode, he is. And then he has a nail gun with him, and I think he accidentally nails his hand into piece of wood or something. Yeah.
Someone pops out and they're like, careful with those nails, Jesus.
Yeah.
That was another thing where I just like laughed hysterically because I thought the way they did it was perfect. It wouldn't have been as funny if he wasn't like, you know, like super ghetto. You know, he was basically Cholo. He was just like, it was amazing.
Like he had the wife beater on and the flannel cap wrapped around his waist and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. Gandhi, or he goes to a library and finds Tom Green, who's doing a book signing. And Tom Green's book is something about ADD. And I don't like Tom Green, honestly. I never really thought Tom Green was very funny. This solidified it. Like, I'm just, his brand of comedy, I think, is just stupid. And I just got really annoyed with this whole sequence.
Yeah, because it's just him repeating the same thing over and over again. Like, and it's like every other thing he says, he repeats it. It's like,
yeah,
flapping my albatross wings, flapping my albatross wings, flapping my albatross wings. Like, all right, I get it. Shut up.
Yeah, it was stupid. It was a waste of, my life, honestly.
Yeah, not my brand of comedy either.
No, not at all.
So we go back to Joan of Arc, who's saying, like, God won't stop talking to her. At one point, the principal is, Scudderworth's there, and he's talking, I can't remember who he's talking to, but he says, like, principals are not the invincible gods that teen magazines would have you believe. Joan's up on stage, like, trying to preach whatever is going on, whatever, you know, quote-unquote God is telling her.
Yeah, having a major freak out, basically.
Yeah, and then her retainer pops out, or we start to hear the signal from it, the audio, and it's obviously a radio station that has
it's
been
a Christian
picked up by
radio station.
Yeah.
Yeah, the camera, like, pans over, and you see this, like, it's almost like a news van kind of thing, but it's for a radio station. And it's like a Christian one. And then they're like, and now 4 straight hours of Amy Grant.
Yeah. So because Gandhi had bent the metal a little bit, it turned into an antenna for that radio station. So basically, that was really funny, actually.
So then she realized she wasn't going crazy and hearing voices and stuff. Gandhi is still upset. And he's basically saying he doesn't want to live in a world where buds diss their homeboys. He shows up to this festival and everybody is just really out to get him and doesn't want him around. And they're like, Abe is basically afraid for Gandhi's life at this point. And he's like, all right, there's only one way to stop this, to prove that you can't get ADD the way everyone thinks you can. And like you said, this basically is the Captain Planet version of the AIDS thing. So he like grabs Gandhi and just starts making out with him in front of everybody. And it was super gross. The like noises that it was making, it was just like,
yeah.
Oh, sick. But afterwards, like, Cleo walks up to Abe and she's like, wow, your brave homoerotic gestures changed my view of ADD.
Yeah.
Mr. Butlertron gets his cardigan back.
And Gandhi ends the episode shoving something up his nose. So, yeah. So the third episode we watched for today's show was Film Fest, Tears of a Clone, Season 1, Episode 4. And this was the one that was chosen by Mark, correct?
Yes, it was. Thanks, Mark.
This one is a starts with a cross-country meet. Cleo is pouring a drink all over herself, you know, trying to be the...
right.
Yeah. The reason it starts like this is because it's showing, like, this is kind of a basic meetup thing, and then their team win, or their side wins, and so when they win, they start a riot, you know, just like those, like, sports teams where they get so into it or whatever that they just start, like, flipping cars and stuff and, like, breaking into stores.
They're, like, lighting things on fire.
To show their appreciation for the team.
Right. Yeah, someone literally says, let's destroy property to show our appreciation of the team.
Right.
So then the school is basically trying to, I don't know, like, re-educate them that that's not okay. So you got, like, Mr. Sheepman is wearing, like, a little badge, and he's like, now today I'm going to be your care if instead of sheriff.
Yeah.
The shady government officials are really paying attention to Scudworth because of the incident, and basically, like, this can't happen again. Like, we're going to come to you, and we're going to talk about this. And he's trying to convince them really hard to go to Olive Garden because he really wants to go eat at Olive Garden.
Instead, they're like, you know, we're coming to your house next Friday. No dairy, please.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he's talking to Mr. Butlertron, and he's like, Mr. Butlertron's talking to him, and he's like, are you thinking what I'm programmed to be thinking? Shopping spree. Yeah.
There's a lot of subplots going on in this episode. I think even more than the last one. There's also, so as a way of trying to help the students express their feelings in a positive way, Abe is like, oh, I'll help out. You know, he's trying to impress Cleo and everybody. He's like, I'll help out. We're going to do a film festival and everyone can get what they need out of their systems using this film festival thing. And Mr. Sheepman's like, there'll never be riots again. Yay. So everyone's kind of like going off to make their own videos and stuff. And Joan, of course, is getting all worked up and upset because, you know, she's still in love with Abe, and Abe is still in love with Cleo and constantly trying to impress Cleo. They're at the diner, like, talking about it. Joan is, like, trying to say she loves him. I think she even does at one point. And, like, he's not really getting it or understanding and thinks she's talking about something else. So she gets upset, walks away, and he's like, Joan, no, come back. And, like, gets up and starts walking. She literally just walked two tables down. And then he's like, oh, my God, I looked everywhere for you. And the policeman comes up. He's like, hey, we put out an APB on your friend. He's like, no, it's okay. I just found her.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
And it was literally the span of like 5 seconds or 10
exactly.
seconds, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of the side plots are the people making their movies in separate ways. Gandhi's, yes. This was actually a spot where I thought Gandhi was kind of funny this episode because his film, like, he wanted to make a movie called Black and Tan. And the reason is, like, and it's going to be like a buddy cop comedy kind of thing, or not even a comedy, I guess, as much as an action thing. And he's trying to convince George Washington Carver to be the black of Black and Tan. And then he's like he doesn't want to do it. And then he's like, well, there's a part for the peanut. And then the peanut's just like, we're listening. And then it goes from there.
He's trying to teach George Washington Carver how to be black because he's like at this part and they're like filming it. And then one part, George Washington Carver is like, say what? And Gandhi's like, no, you're supposed to be like, say what? And he's like, say what? And there's this really long back and forth about that specifically that ends with Gandhi like reacting that way instead of George Washington Carver.
Yeah. We see the peanut is like the main villain.
He's the bad
of this.
Guy.
Yeah, he's the bad guy. Because it opens that scene with like, uno momento, black and tan.
Yeah, it's like a Lethal Weapon / Miami Vice kind of movie is what And the peanut's got like, he's on a boat with like a gun in each hand and shooting at him and stuff.
Yeah. We've got Abe's movie that's like, He's talking to this one guy. He's rehearsing this one guy to be in his film. And his line is, there's nothing in the rule book that says a giraffe can't play football. Yes. And he's reading it so dryly. Every single time he reads it, he's reading it so dryly.
But like the last one, Abe's like, yes.
Yes.
Like, just loves
yeah.
it. He's so deep about it. Like, yes. And then Joan is trying to make a movie all about how much she loves Abe. And she obviously can't get Abe, you know, involved in it, or he'll know. So she gets Genghis Khan to play Abe. And yeah, that's just hilarious seeing him wear the hat.
Yeah.
One thing that's interesting is they are self-aware. Like, they know that they're clones of these other people, and they know the history of their predecessors, which I think is pretty interesting, which is, they explain at one point, that's why Gandhi is the way he is because he's trying to reject being a carbon copy of the real Gandhi. He wants to be his own self. So he purposely does everything opposite of what the real Gandhi would do.
And that's why Joan of Arc was trying, at least in the last episode, trying to, like, so excited that she finally heard God, because she's still anticipating that to happen as it did with her former self. At one point, Abe walks in on Joan, like, in the, I think she's in, like, the filming room or something.
Yeah, she's, like, in an editing booth or something.
Yeah. And so he comes in, but she's talking to herself about how, like, I don't know if I can, you know, if I can make this, like, it's about my feelings about Abe. But she's whispering it to herself, kind of. And he comes in, he's like, hey, Joan, what was that you were saying quietly? And so, and then, like, she's trying to, in a way, also express herself to him again, and or tell him how she feels. And he's just like, keeps calling her like buddy, friend, pal, like making sure to emphasize, bro. Yeah, make sure to emphasize that they are just friends. That's what he sees her as. Just to rub it in a little bit.
So then we get to see the actual festival, and we see, you know, some of Black and Tan. We get to see the end of Abe's movie, which was ridiculous. It was like this giraffe on a football team kicks the field goal, which, like, it lands on the post, teeters a little bit before falling over, and everyone's like cheering. And then the giraffe gets abducted by aliens, and someone's like, he's going home. And then there's this, like, little girl in the crowd that's like, I have your baby in me, giraffe. And I'm like, what is happening? And Abe is, like, silently crying.
He's so proud of it.
He is so proud. And he's like, the giraffe was a metaphor for me.
Yeah.
Joan was like, horrified that she found out, because she thought she threw her film away, but Abe pulled out of the trash and brought it in. And she's horrified to find out that it's going to get played. But then the booth catches on fire. The booth is being manned by Thomas Edison, who, like, is really sleazy, and he talks like this.
Yeah.
And he's a jerk, too. But the booth catches on fire, and every film gets destroyed, much to Cleo's dismay, except for Jones. So they play it. And she's so embarrassed, because she's like, everyone's going to know.
Hold on, though. What's hilarious about it is he's like Edison comes out and is like, every film was burned except for Jones, which was somehow expanded by the fire and will now be shown in widescreen.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So it's like the fire made it grow somehow, and it's even bigger now.
Yeah, that's great. So they play it, and it's just like this artsy snuff film kind of thing that makes absolutely no sense. And then, and you know, everybody's really confused, except one guy's like, oh, who was, oh, Sigmund Freud is like, ha, you love Abe.
Yeah.
But Abe clearly didn't get it. No one else understood it. So.
And then after the successful film fest that was made to prevent future rioting, they begin to riot again.
Yeah, of course. And so it basically all happens again.
Yeah. It just kind of recycled that. And Joan is talking to Abe at the end. You know, he, like you said, was explaining to her that he was a giraffe. And then she was like, well, if you were the giraffe, who was the little girl? The one who said that, you know, she was pregnant with his baby. And he's just like, good night, Joan. And then he leaves. Right. And it's like always leaving her just hanging. Like, yeah, exactly. No explanation. Yeah.
Cue dashboard confessional.
Oh, yeah. It probably did. I don't even know.
So good.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we go through the cloning process ourselves to make exact copies of us. nurture and feed them, allowing them to grow until around the ages of 9 or 10, and... Oh, wait, no, that sounds too complicated. Let's just get our inner kids and have them review Clone High.
Clone High was really funny, and it has me excited to get to high school. I can tell it's gonna be great. But Abe is making a huge mistake going after Cleo and not Joan, because he should really be going for both. I gave this cartoon 4 bowls out of Best Dudes Forever cereal out of 5, and now for a serious note. People with ADD aren't nearly as crazy as Gandhi. That was just pure exploit. Oh, look, a bird! I get you!
Disclaimer. Clone High may be inappropriate for children under the ages of 18, but with that out of the way, this show was hilarious! Who knew poking fun at the over-embellishment of teen dramas could be so entertaining? In short, the stories were fun, the characters great, although Gandhi did get a little annoying at times, and the plot was hysterically nonsensical. Overall, I'd give Clone High 4 big bowls of black and tan bite cereal out of 5. If you haven't yet, you should definitely check out the show where the magic of Mr. Butlertron's cardigan sweater will make you feel safe and welcome. Wesley.
Oh, I wish I had a cardigan like that. I would wear it every day.
I wish I had a Mr. Butlertron.
Then teenagers everywhere would want to be my friend. Nope, that's creepy. Let's just forget about it.
Yeah, no robot.
So do you have any final thoughts about Clone High?
Clone High was kind of a surprise to me. Since I had never heard of it, I didn't know what to expect, but I always go into a show expecting to not be impressed, especially if it's something I had just, they completely slipped my radar, because I'm like, well, if it was good, I would have heard of it, obviously, and that wasn't the case, because I really did end up enjoying this, like we were talking about, with the exception of Gandhi, but I do understand why his character was there. Like, they needed kind of an annoying party character, I guess, but it did feel a little incongruent with the rest of it at times. Otherwise, though, great show. Don't go in for any kind of historical accuracy or anything like that, but just go because it's funny. Like, they could have replaced those characters with anyone else, and it still would have been funny, I think.
I pretty much agree with everything you said. This show was way more fun than I expected. The drawback being that I didn't like Gandhi's character at all. I found him super obnoxious, super annoying. I do think it was genuinely funny, and I love the concept. You can definitely see that style of humor here that Phil Lord and Chris Miller eventually used when they did things like the Lego Movie. It used a lot of the style of music I listened to when I was in high school, which also made it kind of nostalgic for me. So I definitely am interested in watching more of it, and I would have rated this a 5 if Gandhi had not been the character he was. Like, that was so obnoxious that I docked an entire point from it. If he had been written differently, this could have gotten a 5 out of me, but he is definitely the reason that this is a 4.
You know, that's kind of the same reason why it was a 4 for me, too. I really think it was a detractor.
Yeah, absolutely.
But like we were talking about, we both like the show, so thank you, Mark, for suggesting it. Another win for you, because you've got The Tick and now this show under your belt. What's next, Mark? What's next?
Tell us, Mark. Seriously, tell us.
Yes, please. No, absolutely tell us. Like, we'll watch it, we promise. So just real quick, I wanted to point out before we leave this episode, on Twitter, and this was a message, so it's nothing that anybody can go and look up, but on Twitter, we got sent a message by @407Davis. Well, there were various parts to it, and he suggested a different show to us, but at one point in the message, he said, also, thank you for doing what you do. I love your podcast. And that was very nice of him.
Aww.
It's good to be appreciated.
I'm giving you an auditory hug. That's what
is
a
that
hug
what your
sounds
hugs
like.
Sound like?
So there
in,
you go.
In audio form. I think it's because of the cardigan sweaters we have, the magical cardigan sweaters.
Yeah.
That's why people love us.
It's true.
Well, listeners, it looks like our milk supply has now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. And next week, we'll be watching
Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego? Suggested by Ira Sutton via YouTube.
I haven't seen that show in 50 years, or feels like that long.
You're older than I thought.
So once again, I'm Joseph.
I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth.
A place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.